This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. For most of this hour, we're going to focus on the rules of war and how both sides are adhering to the various treaties that they've signed that regulate some aspects of combat, what forces can do and can't, how they treat enemy prisoners, and their responsibility to care for civilians. But there have been a number of important developments in and around Iraq today, and we want to bring you up to date. Less than an hour ago, Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld and the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Richard Myers, conducted a briefing at the Pentagon. Both men spoke about what may happen as U.S. troops close in and around Baghdad. General Myers says U.S. forces may just sit outside the city and render Saddam Hussein's regime irrelevant.
You may have a regime, you may not. I use the term irrelevant because at this point they're not going to be able to communicate with the people of Iraq. That will all be shut down. We would control the water, the electricity, things like that. I'm not suggesting any of that would be turned off, turned on. It just would depend on the tactical situation. So they become an entity, perhaps, if there's anybody left, if they haven't all run. Of course, there's lots of reports of people already leaving Baghdad.
The electricity did go off in Baghdad earlier tonight. It is after dark there, but General Myers said the electrical facilities of the city were not targeted by U.S. forces. Joining us now from the Pentagon is NPR's Jennifer Ludden. Good of you to join us.
Hi there, Neil.
In terms of describing this situation in Baghdad, what was General Myers talking about?
Well, he took pains to say that this notion of a siege that's been put out is not the right picture in his mind. To him, it's not a siege. But I don't know what else to call what he's describing, as we heard in the cut there, with an entity in Baghdad cut off from the rest of the country, he said, cut off even from parts of Baghdad, and the U.S. controlling everything outside. He said during this period, an interim Iraqi government would even start taking shape. So it sounds to me like a big flip from the past, where they've been talking about cutting off the head of the snake and the rest of the country will then follow. This essentially says the rest of the country is going to move on and leave the regime in Baghdad to wither and die.
So he said if U.S. Forces control the important nodes of the city, things like power stations, water plants, that sort of thing, the government, whatever might remain of it, wouldn't be important.
Right, right. Would render itself irrelevant.
Okay. What if U.S. troops do go into Baghdad? Did they talk about what everybody's frightened of, which is this prospect of a block-to-block fighting?
Yeah. General Myers essentially said, look, half of Baghdad is Shia, which has long, the Shia population of Iraq has long been repressed by Saddam Hussein's government. Myers said, quote, you can assume they might be helpful, unquote, to U.S. forces. He was trying to reduce the threat that one might face in Baghdad. But it is still clear that U.S. military planners do not want a scenario of urban warfare. They wanted to avoid this all along. And once again today, we heard Secretary Rumsfeld suggest that military officers at the right time may turn on the regime and decide to be helpful to the U.S. forces. Military analysts who've been working with the Pentagon in the past year preparing urban warfare scenarios suggest that perhaps special forces, special operations, or other small units could go in to the city, seize strategic sites, and again kind of work around a way to make the regime cut it off from everything else and isolate it. So they're not really dealing with the prospect of mass urban warfare.
Mm-hmm. Now, there have been some losses to U.S. forces. Aircraft went down last night, two of them. What do we learn today?
The initial reports were that both a Black Hawk helicopter with the Army and a Navy fighter jet could have been downed by Iraqi small arms fire. Now there's the possibility that it could have been friendly fire. This morning in Qatar, Brigadier General Vincent Brooks, Central Command, said the F-A-18 Navy fighter jet did not appear to have gone down from hostile fire. We've got no confirmation that there's a friendly fire investigation with the Black Hawk, but also no denial. denial of that. And there would have been one pilot in the Navy fighter jet. There's no word on that pilot's fate. We are told that in the Black Hawk crash, 6 people died, 3 or 4 were wounded and rescued, and 1 is missing.
There were reports earlier today also of a friendly fire incident of an American aircraft apparently opening fire on American troops.
That's right. The one Army soldier on the ground apparently is dead from that, and several more injured, and the investigation is underway. It came up several times at the briefing today, and both Secretary Rumsfeld and General Myers refuted any notion that there's been an increase in friendly fire incidents. They said, look, this is something that's happened as long as there's been warfare. We shouldn't call it unavoidable. We'd like to avoid it, but these things do happen, and they'll review their communication systems and their technical systems to see what went wrong.
Jennifer, finally, in recent appearances, when reporters were asking questions about published and broadcast criticism of the overall plan and whether there were enough troops, Secretary Rumsfeld has seemed defensive, indeed General Myers as well. What about today?
Oh, far, far from it. Well, you know, he's been under fire, so to speak. That's a terrible analogy. He's, you know, been attacked for, there's been claims of divisions about the war plan. And last week, if you remember, a lot of analysts were saying how bogged down it was. Well, now they're sitting, as they put it, at the gates of Baghdad. So suddenly everything is going swimmingly. And Rumsfeld was very confident and very full of praise for the operation. And at the end of the press conference, he was asked about, doesn't the most unpredictable part of this battle lie ahead with Baghdad? And he got very expansive and said, look, this was unpredictable from the very beginning. Go back and look at all the unknowns there were and how all the things we were afraid of before haven't happened. For the most part, oil wells have not been destroyed. Our troops were not attacked with chemical gases while they sat in Kuwait waiting to go in. Any number of variables could have gone wrong and haven't. So he was feeling very confident and full of praise for what's happened so far.
NPR's Jennifer Ludden with us from the Pentagon, and I expect we'll have more on that later today on All Things Considered as well. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you.
The United States has repeatedly said, officials from the president on down have repeatedly said that the U.S. takes painstaking efforts to limit civilian casualties in the war against Iraq. Independent military analyst William Arkin says those statements leave out one important element. Mr. Arkin is also a columnist with the Los Angeles Times. He joins us now from his office in New York City. Bill Arkin, good to have you back.
Thank you very much.
What do you think those statements leave out?
Well, there's two different wars going on, very distinct ones. There's the air war that we're watching on television in Baghdad, in which the U.S. military can obviously practice meticulous targeting, can select precision-guided weapons, which have been 100% of the weapons used in Baghdad, and can study a target for quite some period, determining what the civilian damage would be if a blast radius were achieved, and then guide the weapon in a certain direction in order to do that. That's one war. The other war, of course, is what we're not seeing as much of, and that's the war in the south as the U.S. ground forces make their way towards Baghdad. And we're now getting sort of the first really authoritative reports from southern towns, Hilla, Kifl, Hindiya, in which there are much larger reports of civilian casualties, and indeed larger civilian casualties, which is more, I think, what people's images of the nature of warfare is.
Civilian casualties in Hilla apparently caused by cluster bombs.
Well, we don't know for sure what causes each of these. Even the people who were shown to the news media yesterday and today in Hilla hospitals came from a variety of surrounding villages, including Hindiya on the Euphrates, where the 3rd Infantry Division made its way across the river. There have been various reports of cluster bomb use, and the Pentagon, of course, has not denied its use, and I guess the Pentagon's position would be that this is one of the weapons in their arsenal, and they are used appropriately. There's been some advance, I would say, in terms of the use of cluster bombs in this war from previous conflicts, in the sense that at least the U.S. military is very sensitized to the civilian effect of cluster bombs and has refrained from using them in Baghdad or in other cities when they're attacking targets. I think in the case of Hindiya and Kifl and possibly in Hilla as well, we may see instance in which ground forces, which I think have not been as sensitized to the effect of cluster bombs, have been firing artillery and these MLRS rockets against Iraqi targets, either regular army or paramilitary targets, really without regard for the fact that those weapons have an enormous spread and can cause harm. But in any case, civilians were clearly in the area and were injured, and whether those injuries in the immediate sense occurred as a result of cluster bombs or as a result of regular munitions, it still shows that the ground force is far more deadly, and that real warfare, that is, warfare that's not done in a very meticulous and planned way, is far more injurious to the civilian population.
And we're just getting reports now from Reuters news agency, which says a reporter in the village of Furat near the airport in Baghdad reports dozens of Iraqi casualties, some military, some civilian, in what they say is a rocket attack, perhaps the latest example of what you're talking about. But, Bill, the other part of this is that we're also seeing, the other part we're not seeing is whatever it is that is happening to Iraqi military formations, to the Republican Guards.
Absolutely, Neil. I think that really the hidden picture here is just the enormous carnage that is being unleashed upon Iraqi young men, both regular army, Republican Guard, and paramilitaries, that the U.S. military is essentially driving right through on the battlefield. You know, up until about Sunday, there were really no significant ground engagements. Virtually all of the attacks upon Republican Guard and regular army units had taken place from long-range artillery, Apache attack helicopters, and air power. And on Sunday, when the 3rd Infantry Division actually engaged the Medina Division on the ground, and then later on when the Marines engaged the Baghdad Division on the ground, they just went through enormous numbers of Iraqi dead and injured. And I don't think that there's some conspiracy on the part of the news media to not report this story, but it's really going to be, I think, a difficult problem for us in the coming days and weeks, because if the United States is articulating Operation Iraqi Freedom as something that is undertaken always mindful of the reconstruction of Iraq and how it is going to look in the rest of the world, the death of thousands of Iraqi soldiers is just as much going to bear upon how people in Iraq see it. Every one of those people have families, relatives, and they're all not members of the regime. In fact, Secretary Rumsfeld stresses every day that the normal Iraqi soldier should lay down his arms or should surrender, and they're not part of the regime, and yet every one of their family members must be thinking, or will be thinking in the future, that the United States slaughtered their kids. And I think that's, again, it's a part of warfare, Neil. I'm not saying that it's not. But I think that we don't appreciate the degree to which the conventional American military is so far superior to its Iraqi opponent.
So this is the bully aspect, the David and Goliath aspect. But, I mean, obviously, Bill, members of the Republican Guards and regular formations, clearly these are legitimate targets.
Oh, there's no question that they are, and there's also no question that that anybody who wears a uniform and shoots at another person in a uniform is fair game. I think that this is just more of a question of what is the broader achievement trying to what's the U.S. trying to achieve? And again, my take on what's happening right now, Neil, is that U.S. ground forces have not surrounded Baghdad, and despite the fact that they are knocking on the door, they're knocking on the door at one little tiny slice of Baghdad in the western suburb around Saddam International Airport. No one necessarily has the stomach to go into a city of 5 million and fight their way through with one division, but we're still waiting outside Basra. And so I think that when we think about the long term, that is a week ahead or 2 weeks ahead, as the U.S.
very quickly, Bill,
try to kill the regime, the question of the status of the Iraqi military is going to be a really important one for the people of Iraq.
Independent military analyst Bill Arkin, thanks very much.
Thank you.
I'm Neil Conan, back after a break. This is NPR News.